This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
This film is set on an island, and I'm just completely fascinated by that. I know that, you know, that one of those places you call your home. You have three homes at least, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the island is a formation that has its own spatial qualities. And so it's, at the same time, it's isolated, but it's also connected. And I was wondering, to what extent did that influence your narrative here? Once you set it there, what does it do to your narrative?
Mm-hmm. It's a good question. I think I was more thinking about it in a sense that there's this island where something very important is happening, and there's an island also where I experienced something, and I needed to talk about that through this new sort of set of things that are happening. Now, it is an island, and so I was just speaking to your students before, and there is something about it being surrounded by water. So water becomes very important. Water is important because migrants are coming by the way of water. Mm-hmm. Water is important because it represents sort of what maybe borders should look like more, or it doesn't have borders, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's how I think about it in terms of it being an island. I don't think I went as far as you are going with it.
But that's a problem. Once you make the film, we can do anything with it.
And it also takes this shape of an essayist documentary, mm-hmm. that's telling this your autobiographical story that's sort of at the intersection of personal, subjective, and the social history that we're still mm-hmm. living. can you... I'm also thinking about, you know, you have these chapters in this essay. Can you talk a little bit about that, about the fragmented nature and how that's working here?
Yeah. So the film is, I'm narrating the film. It's, you know, it introduces me and my experience, but it's not about me, it's about these people that we meet along the way. And it's also, it was important for me, for example, to be very transparent about who is talking, why are they talking, in what way are they talking about the people in the film, because I'm not talking about my own community. So this transparency was very, very important. Mm-hmm. So that the viewer can kind of recognize that this is a version of the truth, not an absolute truth. You can choose whether to agree with me or not agree with me. And so I become sort of a guide, right, through the film. Mm-hmm. And the film is, because Cyprus is a divided island, it's also a divided community. So it made sense to me to separate the film in that way as well, right, into these chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a very, very complex history too. So in order to make sense of it, I think it was in my mind, I had to compartmentalize it sort of.
Yeah. And you also have this really wonderful framing technique. You know, at the beginning and at the very end, we have that same shot of the sea and through the window, and mm-hmm. then we can see the boat, and then maybe a crate or something like that. Can you tell us a little bit more about how this mise en abîme, self-reflexive frames within frames. How is this working, mm-hmm. and how is this helping tell? How are you using this in your narrative?
Yeah, there's a lot of images in the film that are sort of either looking through a certain window, or they're sort of border vision.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that yes, I might like want you to see that there is some kind of a limited range of understanding. Or that you should maybe perhaps at times feel as if you're an outsider and looking from the outside in, right? There's a sort of a distance. And then that image, yeah, is the same at the beginning and the end, because I'm not going to let you off that easy. Sort of, this is a loop, right? It keeps happening. As we can see, this is 2013, and now it's 2015, yeah. And things are much, much worse. So it's still going on, right?
Yeah.
I think that's in terms of framing. That's what I was sort of thinking about.
You know, what was one of the first things that struck me early on in your narrative? You have a play of words on the strangely familiar and the familiarly strange. Mm. And that was really beautiful and evocative. So right from the beginning, you seem to be pointing to a kind of indeterminacy between self and other.
Mm-hmm.
And this carries over to the figure of the swimmer. For instance, are we really watching a refugee swimming ashore, or is it just a tourist swimming in the sea? And this kind of iconographic interchangeability, would you say that it functions here as something like a documentary reenactment? Or there is something more that you wanted to do with this?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so the images are almost, well, aside from the very obvious injuries and things, they're almost never representative of what they are. So that was the swimmer. Mm. Was we were filming on the north side, the Turkish side, and there was just a boy swimming.
Mm.
And but he became the smuggler, right? Because the smugglers mm-hmm. get away. So the film sort of happens as a collage. I write, I make observations, I put those thoughts together, and then I sort of collage images to that. Mm-hmm. And everything becomes a metaphor or becomes a representation of something or for something. That's sort of how I was put together.
You know, and we were talking about the first scene, and that's where you mentioned the strangely familiar and the familiar strange. And especially in that very first scene, I really felt that distance that you set between, you had the long shots, the panoramic, mm-hmm. the still, which you have throughout, although the camera does move a little bit more. And then there's this vision, there's the top down. Mm-hmm. And I think that this distance really works, serves you well, serves the narrative voice well. I'm just wondering, like, what is your position as filmmaker with the people and the places that you're filming?
Mm-hmm.
And what is that distance? I liked it. It worked. And I'm just wanted to, but at the same time, there was a real intimacy there. And I'm just wondering how that is reflecting your actual relationship with the
mm-hmm.
with what you were filming.
Yeah, so for me, it was almost like, it was kind of an investigation, right? I go on this journey and I try to find things out. And I meet people and I create genuine friendships. Not because I need to, not because I have to for the purpose of the film, but it's just because something I innately want to or need to do. And then I try to figure out how does that fit, how do I fit in that story, how am I serving them? How are they serving me? And it sort of all comes together. Then I have to recognize my own privilege, and I have to address that, and I have to sort of acknowledge it, right, and represent it in the film. So there are moments in the film that, for example, that singing scene, where, you know, if that wasn't included, or if I didn't say that, look, this is how I enter back into my reality, I wouldn't be truthful to the experience, right? I would be telling you a story, but I wouldn't be telling you a truthful experience.
Mm.
And that there is a big disconnect between my own existence and their existence and so on. And all these things need to be sort of talked about.
So, which actually brings me to the other question. Can you tell us a little bit about your personal background, your educational background, and what kind of influences you've had along your path that have really helped shape the decisions you made in making this film?
So I'm Yugoslavian. I grew up in Cyprus, and I've been living in Europe for 17 years now, where I was educated as well in illustration, animation, and then later on film. This particular film, I was, of course, Sans Soleil is one of my favorite films. I was watching a lot of Chris Marker and, you know, Agnes Varda and these kind of people, but also Jim Jarmusch, yeah. which you were going to mention, which is very far away from any of these people. but there is something about the structure of his films and sort of, the especially the early films, they're sort of chaptered or have different stories. Mm-hmm. That was intriguing to me. But yeah, I tried to read a lot. I tried to read, you know, things like the Foreign Imperfect Cinema, mm-hmm. Anything really that could expand my way of thinking about film or what I could say. And I think what's most liberating is this idea that I can do anything. I can be free in the way I want to express myself, and I need to sort of recheck that all the time if I'm being true to my own sort of voice and vision and not. And it was tricky with this film because you also have a responsibility with the people that you're filming with. So yeah, it's a sort of a fine balance.
Can you say a bit more about that? I know it's a tough one, but it's really intriguing. Like, how do you stay true to your subject and yet be free to do what you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe something specific that you had to face while doing this film?
Yeah. There's many examples. For example, I felt the responsibility to the Cypriot community because I'm talking about the Cypriot community, which I am sort of a part of, but not really. I'm also talking about the refugee community, which, again, I have a connection to, but not really. And then I have to stay true to my own vision. And I also have to stay true to the politics of everything and the fact that this should be accessible to a larger population, right? So it was a tricky thing because, for example, I personally really dislike interviews. So sit-down interviews, which we have in the film, but mm-hmm. I had to do that. And there is no way that you would believe me as a narrator if I told you how racist that member of parliament is, right? If I tried to retell that, you would be like, yeah, okay. But to see him speak, then it's something quite different. So it was a tricky situation.
Now the poem and the song. Tell mm-hmm. us a bit more about how you came upon those yeah. and how you used them. And the song wasn't subtitled, so, you know, mm-hmm. I was wondering if the words meant something in the mm-hmm. context of this, or was it just your attempt to show the activists, the artists, the other people in the crevices that are emerging?
Yeah, yeah. So the people who are performing the song, those are my friends, and they're very talented musicians, artists, and so on. And I just happened to be on the roof one day, and there was this incredible environment, and my friend said, why don't you just, you know, film something? I had no intention of putting it in the film. But, of course, it made it there because there was a situation, literally, I think, the day before that I was filming with some Kurdish refugees, and it was such an intense situation. I would go home and I was very, very emotional, crying. And then the next day I would be in that situation and it was so jarring, I couldn't adjust. And then I would try to explain to my friends these sort of different realities and I couldn't. There was no way to describe that. And so I said, I have to talk about that. I have to show this sort of disconnect. So that had to be in the film for those purposes. And also because at that point you've been reading for a really long time, you're paying attention, you're sort of tired, it's a very, very intense and hard subject matter. And at that point you just need to just sit back and say, oh, there is beauty in the world, it's okay, and we just need to access it, and it should be available to everybody, let's just enjoy that. And I didn't subtitle it on purpose because of that, because you just sort of need to take it in and just relax. It's not related to migrants, it's actually a love song from one woman to another woman. And then, of course, then we snap back into reality. It was sort of a Brechtian movement. Let's just, you know, snap you back in. And then the poem at the end was a very, very lucky coincidence or accident. I had a translator who actually Francesca introduced me to, and I had a really terrible poem by the 16-year-old boy that I was going to use. And she said, you know, this poem is not very good. I said, I know it's not very good. This is the ending of the film. It needs to be good. What am I going to do? And she said, it's terrible. And she said, well, you know, I know this. My friend of mine is an amazing poet, and he's a refugee, and he's in Belgium, and he's waiting for his papers. Let's just ask him. So she asked him, and he was more than happy. He sent us this poem, and he recorded it himself on a simple phone and sent it to us, and it was the most beautiful thing I had read. And for me, it makes the whole film. But without that poem, I don't think the film would be what it is. Mm. It's quite special.
Mm-hmm. When you use the term amorphous migrant bodies, mm-hmm. what are you referring to?
Right well, there? I think because, you know, they're grouped in a certain group, right? So it's the migrants, and they fit this profile, and that's what it is, right? The same thing as the Syrian refugees, right? The Syrian refugees are that, and they could be terrorists, and they could be this, and they could be that. And what we need to understand is that each person is an individual, right? You cannot. And he says it, one of the lawyers in the film. You know, everybody's an individual. You cannot judge them as a group, as a sort of a stereotype group. So I think that's what I'm trying to refer to there. Yeah.
I was thinking, you can't help think, I mean, this has been 2 years since you made this film, and things have become worse. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, the debates have come home to America, you know, all that's going on with this, in this presidential campaign year. And central to that is a question of security, and the current refugee crisis, and the fear of infiltration by ISIS operatives. This brings me to the question of uncertainty as something like a radical unknown. There is no foolproof way to immunize ourselves from various risks, be they pandemics or cyber attacks or terrorist attacks, because so much remains unknown and beyond our control. And the idea of evaporating borders, if I were to take it more cynically, in a negative way, that would draw attention to the tenuousness of the various walls and checkpoints, the porosity of all screens and filters, the impossibility of marking out ourselves from the other, right? Who's the other? So that's when we become paranoid. We try to securitize ourselves neurotically by setting up more screens, more walls, insisting on our difference from the other. And there's that great moment which we all have experienced, right? When we want to separate ourselves out from someone that we find scary. So the fear inventions and the imagined identity sections show us this attempt at the individual and collective levels. And yet, by the end of the film, where we turn to these moments where you gesture to these other possibilities, other modes of being, of perhaps living in common, mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more about those possibilities that you see.
Mm-hmm. So for me, when I think of evaporating borders, it's more of it's to evaporate our own sort of mental borders. I don't think it's like literally the borders are evaporating. So yeah, I mean, even like that ending quote, which for me is very important. Well, before I go to the ending quote, I was talking to Bianca before, and I was saying that what's really important is that I don't want to be pointing fingers and just blaming, you know, this neo-Nazis. Or the idea is that I want to look at myself. So there's a moment in the film where I point a finger at myself, and I say, okay, so I see these two Romanian people, and I see them as criminals and so on and so on, and these are my own people. And so I recognize myself in these neo-Nazi rallies and my own thought process, right? How easily it pops up. And we're all guilty of it, and we all have prejudice, and we all have pre-assumptions, and we all jump to conclusions. And so the idea is, what I want to pose to the viewer is, hopefully they have that sort of same introspection and say, well, how do I participate in this process, right? Where do I form those kind of thoughts? And then that last quote, which is, who should let this world be beautiful, it's the same thing. You know, how do I participate in this world? And am I making the world a more beautiful place, or am I not making the world, or am I taking away from it? And so if we're constantly checking that, and if you could just catch yourself doing that thing and sort of change it up, it starts from me, and then it starts from you, and it ripples, and so on. Those are the possibilities that I see.
Hi. I have two questions. So I was happily surprised to hear that you were speaking, you were narrating in Greek, because
are
I
you,
was not expecting...
Are you Greek or Cypriot?
Sorry?
Are you Greek or Cypriot?
I'm Greek.
Yeah.
Why? I was expecting the film to be in English, to be honest. Yeah. It has an English title, and the titles were in English in the beginning.
Yeah, it's a good question. Because what I was saying before, because I'm not speaking about... I grew up in Cyprus, and I feel very much that it's my home, but I'm still not a Cypriot. And so I felt a responsibility, because when you speak a language, you are closer to a culture, you understand the culture better. And so for me, even though the film would have been much more commercially viable if it was in English, and I would have made more money, I think for me it was important, for at least for the Greek-speaking community, for the Cypriot community, to understand who is talking to them. So that I understand you, I speak your language, I am part of the Cypriot context, but at the same time, because I speak with an accent, I am an outsider. So I'm an insider, but I'm an outsider. So it was very important for me, at least for that population of people, to understand that. And then the other part of that is that each language has a texture, and so English has one sort of melodic, and Greek has another, and Spanish has another, and Arabic has a very beautiful one too, and so on. And so for me, Greek has a very special meditative, at least when I speak it, I have to slow down, I have to sort of become something else, and then that gives the film a new sort of music, a new sort of layer that wouldn't exist in English. I think it would have been a different film. Hmm.
A quick interjection. I mean, I'm thinking this is the third time I've seen it. You know, the way you do not want to go close to the bodies or go too close, the refusal I was talking about, but also this sort of, you know, if you had spoken in English, it would still have been an accented English. Mm-hmm. So you did it in Greek, right? Not, again, a refusal, not the international standard for mm-hmm. documentary. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, these refusals, I think, are grounded in a certain kind of refusal of the indexical, mm-hmm. you know, the kind of indexical mm-hmm. that attaches us to something, mm-hmm. because it's about displacement.
Yeah.
And you're performing the displacement at various registers.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that.
Has this been filmed or screened in Cyprus? And if so, mm-hmm. how is it received?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's screened in Cyprus a few times. The very first time, it was actually too well received. I was hoping for more opposition, but it's okay. Even though it was well received, you still have people who react very strongly to it because they're watching themselves. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I am Serbian. I grew up in Serbia, Cyprus in the US, but I don't necessarily identify as any of these things very strongly. But if I see a film about Serbia and, you know, how Serbians are portrayed in a very bad light, even if I agree with the politics of the film, I would still feel a pang, right? Like a sting. Because it's part of my identity. It's completely normal. And so they react in the same way. You know, there's a sort of a self-defense that you want to react to. And it's a good thing, because they've never seen themselves in that light before. So it was well-received, and then we screened it in some schools, and they screened a lot of community organizing and sort of anti-fascist rallies and so on. And they continue to screen it. I wish it was used in... more, but you know, to get the neo-Nazis to see this film is not going to happen. But they did screen it on the borders as well, and UNHCR and different sort of organizations. So it's been well. We're trying to get into schools more. That's where it would be most effective.
Hmm. I wanted to return to Lila's question about the essayistic, actually, to ask you about particular images that you found, or footage you found most haunting, because I was very struck by the fact that We have a series of images that seem descriptive at first, like the little boy who's in the balcony, mm-hmm. or the flamingos. And then later we come back to them, and by the time we come back to the little boy, we know 50 children, you know, 1,000 people, children are missing. When we come to the flamingos, they're very painful because they don't have any check posts to migrate, and we know of the migrations by them. So there's a kind of a language that you make us learn about images, and there's a patterning of images that you attach to that seems very much personal and essayistic to me. So I'm just wondering, was there footage that you took that became your own language for understanding this?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question, too. Mm. So when I was shooting, I really shoot very intuitively. And I knew that, for example, the flamingos would be a metaphor throughout the whole film. That was clear from the beginning. But the way the film, because I would make notes, and then I would shoot, and I would make notes, and I would read, and I would sort of get quotes together and stuff like that. And then I would go to New York Film Festival and watch a Chris Marker film, and then I would find something there that I could sort of, you know, reappropriate or whatever. But I wrote the whole thing as an essay first. I wrote it as a letter to a friend, as if I was telling a friend a story. And then I would sort of collage the images to that. And in that essay to the friend, I also inserted the interviews with a, you know, member of parliament and so on, so that it becomes sort of a story. And then that's where the images sort of, you know, repeat and become these motifs. And I didn't know I was going to do it that way, but it started making sense to do that. I tried to figure out how to structure it in my mind, and the only way that I could really come up was just to tell a friend. And I literally started saying, like, "Dear Martina," you know, and sort of the events as they happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.